such a great racket ambiguity.
Emotion at Rina Yisrael.
It's sheer and stand up.
What is that?
Yeah. He showed this to me yesterday, and I've been concerned about this since I'm relatively new here. I am new here. And so, and for my expertise in these controversies in Rina Yisrael, it was, you know, it was limited. So it's not so clear that I can really give this talk as advertised. But there are enough other controversies that Jews have been engaged in. So, this is a depressing topic for a holiday, but there is Memorial Day, and so I thought that that does make it appropriate. I mean, that's one of the reasons I chose it. It's also the month of Sivan, which, as Rabbi Schachter pointed out in a talk that he gave on a recent Shabbos, is the month in which these events took place. And so it is, in a sense, appropriate to memorialize or to discuss the issue of memorializing these martyrs today. When the Hebrew University held an Erev Iyun to commemorate these events, it was held on the 900th anniversary of the events, meaning in 1996. However, it was not held in Sivan of 1996. It was held on January 1st, 1996. When I participated in it. When I arrived in Israel, I made a call to a Jewish historian there, Reuven Bonfield, whom I knew. And as soon as I identified myself on the phone, he said, "Oh, higata lefestival Tatnu." Tatnu is the year of the First Crusade. As you got here for the celebration of the these events, and I was reminded of something my father-in-law used to say about two Jews having a depressing conversation, and finally one says to the other, "Let's talk about happier things." Then hot your yahrzeit. So this is sort of, you know, the way Jews structure their lives. Now, the First Crusade was not aimed at Jews, and even the people that went out to fight the Crusade initially didn't leave with the charge of attacking Jews. But we find in the sources an assertion, which I actually consider plausible, that they said to themselves, "We're going to fight the Muslims, God knows how far away, because they desecrated Jesus' grave, supposedly. And here there are Jews who actually killed him, living next door." Now there was this was not a conversionary effort. It was a case of mobs with bloodlust, I think. However, conversion could save you. In other words, it was not so much that these mobs went to engage in a crusade to get Jews to convert to Christianity. But when they encountered the Jews, when they went to seek them out, Jews who converted would be spared. That doesn't mean they'd be spared all the time. Then there'd be excitement of an attack. You never know what will happen, but in the vast majority of cases, conversion would save you. Before proceeding, let me just say that it was a given for the Jews of the Rhineland in the late 11th century, that conversion to Christianity is forbidden even on pain of death. That was a given. There was no discussion about whether it is permissible to convert to Christianity in order to save your life. It wasn't permissible. whatever the issues concerning Christianity's status for non-Jews, there was no question that, and I think that for these people there was no question even for non-Jews, but certainly there was no question that for Jews this was Avodah Zarah, and it fit in the category of Sharei Gal Yavor. There's no discussion of that. However, what happened here was more than that. The halacha requires passive martyrdom. That is, you have to allow yourself to be killed. Yehareg is not an active verb. But here, the Jews of the Rhineland, in significant measure, committed suicide and even killed their children in order to avoid conversion. Now, there is a lengthy, complex, and lively discussion among historians regarding the historicity of the Crusade Chronicles. For our purposes, I don't really have to go into that controversy, because even the people who are most skeptical of the details that we are given in these chronicles recognize that the basic events that will form the basis for our discussion today happened. I am more inclined towards the view that the chronicles are somewhat more reliable than the view that they are almost entirely unreliable. But again, that doesn't matter. Even the people who might say they are almost entirely unreliable agree on the basis of Christian sources as well as Jewish sources that these suicides and these killings of children took place. These events took place in the context of profound emotional turmoil. A bracha was quasi created for this purpose. Initially, Jews said an existing bracha, but in a rather new context of Al Hashchita. They made a bracha b'shem u'malchus of Al Hashchita. Later, this turned into a completely new bracha of Al Kiddush Hashem. The emotions that this arouses have not ended to this day, because one of the most vigorous controversies among Jewish historians, not the one that I'm most interested in today, was aroused when Yisrael Yuval, then of the Open University and now of the Hebrew University, wrote an article called Hanakam B'Haklala Hadam B'Alila, in which he argued that the blood libel was essentially inspired by Christians seeing Jews killing their own children, presumably out of, as they understood it, out of hatred of Christianity. So they, it was a kal vachomer that they would kill Christian children, and that they hated Christianity. He demonstrated in the first parts of the article. There are many, many things to discuss regarding Yuval's article, but this is not the time to do it. My distinguished brother-in-law, David Schatz, once said he was going to print a business card that would say, David C. Schatz, licensed epistemologist with an emergency phone number. So I almost once printed it up for him as a birthday present, but I guess this still how much it cost, and I was too cheap to actually do it. But I got an emergency phone call a few years later, as a medieval Jewish historian. So I should really print up such a card for myself. At 10 after 6 in the morning, the phone rang. It was Tzvi Yekutiel, who was a kind of administrator of scholarship in Israel, wanting to know if I would referee an article for a special double journal, a double issue of the journal that printed Yuval's article would contain responses to that article. It was this long article that was part of a dissertation at Cambridge or Oxford in English by someone who couldn't even read Yuval's original article. But she was writing about Christian reactions to the First Crusade, to the Jews' behavior during the First Crusade. And David Ruderman, who was then at Yale and is now at Penn, was about to leave Jerusalem for the airport. This was before email attachments or anything like that. And he would bring the article if I would be willing to referee it. In Jerusalem, it wasn't 10 after 6 in the morning. It might have even been 10 to 6 in the morning. Anyway, the emotions raised by this are a little bit illustrated by this story. They were having a special double issue urgently printed in response to this article. The issue before us is the permissibility of the behavior that I just summarized. Suicide and even killing of children, killing of others, in order to avoid avodah zarah. Odos yehareh val yavor include such a such behavior. Now we begin with the basic premise that suicide and certainly murder are forbidden. The prohibition of suicide is derived in a passage in Bereishit Rabba that we will have to look at, and which is the first source on your sheets, from a pasuk that I really should have reproduced in its entirety. So let me say it. You're all familiar with it. It's a pasuk in Bereishis. V'ach es imchem l'nafsho seichem edrosh miyad kol chayo en reshena u'miyad ha'adam miyad ish ochiv edrosh es nefesh ha'adam. So, v'ach es imchem l'nafsho seichem edrosh is said by the Midrash. Just reading the first few words of that passage now. We'll get to the next words a little bit later. Ach, lavi es hachonek atzmo. This prohibition of ach es dimchem l'nafsho seichem edrosh refers to suicide. And so suicide is prohibited. That murder is prohibited, we understand, without further discussion. Now, they did it anyway, and they did it with justifications that appear in our texts. Now, our texts means the Chronicles, it means halachic literature, but these texts, of course, I don't know if I should say of course, but pretty much of course, are texts subsequent to the events. You don't have earlier texts that say that suicide, except maybe this text in Bereishis Rabba, that say that you are not allowed to, that you are allowed to commit suicide under certain circumstances. But, and the, well, the historian's controversy that I do want to engage today is one that was initiated by an article by Chaim Soloveitchik, in which he said that these behaviors are forbidden behaviors, obviously, that one would expect that people who did this would have been, at best, buried at the edge of the cemetery together with other terrible sinners, and instead, they were lionized. And they were lionized, he said, because of the emotions that were generated by these events, by the fact that it was unimaginable that these people, who had after all given their lives for Judaism, were sinners, let alone terrible sinners. And consequently, arguments were mustered that would not have been mustered in any neutral context. Arguments from agadic sources rather than proper halachic sources, and arguments that are also not really persuasive, even in their own terms. This last point he did not make as clearly in his first article as he did the point about Agadah. He was subjected to criticism by two other very distinguished Jewish historians and scholars, Yisrael Tashma and Avraham Grossman, who argued that Ashkenazic Jews did not make the sort of distinction between agadic sources and halachic sources that we might be accustomed to, might be more expected in a Sephardic milieu, or in, as they put it, if not in writing, in oral communications, in brisk. This distinction was not a distinction made in medieval Ashkenaz, and therefore the use of agaric sources is perfectly acceptable and normal for these people. Chaim Soloveitchik responded with a long article in the Jewish Quarterly Review, arguing both for the atypical character of the citation of such sources among Tosafists, and for the position that the actual arguments themselves are forced arguments that wouldn't have been made in other contexts. Between these two articles, I wrote something in a book in memory of Jacob Katz, on Jacob Katz's work regarding medieval Jewish-Christian relations, where I also addressed some of these issues, again, prior to the second article by Dr. Soloveitchik. So let's look at the sources that were cited and how they were used. Let's look then at source number two. This is indeed a purely agadic source. Maaseh v'dalad meyos yelodim v'ilados shenishbu lekolom, who were taken captive for immoral purposes. Hirgishu ba'atzman lemahein misbakshim. The people who drown have a portion in the world to come. I will bring back from the depths of the sea. When the young women heard this, koftsu kulan, v'naflu l'soch hayom. Nasu yilodim kal v'chomer ba'atzman, mahalolu shadarkon l'chach, which presumably means that, you know, they were going to be used for sexual purposes, but at least, you know, it would be a normal kind of sexual relationship. Anu she'en darkeinu l'chach. There's a yud, probably shouldn't be there, except for, anyway, it doesn't matter. This is a moving, deeply moving passage. It's not a halachic passage, but it clearly reflects approval on the part of the Gemara. That this is Gemara in Gittin, as I indicated, Nun Zayin Amud Bet. It makes its appearance in a kina, which people pay attention. They see the reference clearly, very clearly. The few lines, and which also indicates the impact of this story on later Jews. The story begins. It's near the end of a kina. Says that they sent these people in three boats. Hashiveinu shivu kivo b'nivchayon. They cried out, you know, bring us back. As they entered the depths of the sea, v'shitfu atzmam yachad l'impol b'yon. Shir v'sishbacho sharu kal yon. Ki olecho horagnu b'msulos yon. Ki sehomos bo ad nafshon. This is an
indication of the power and impact of this story, but it is not, when all is said and done, a halachic source. And in this respect, we are dealing with Agadah. Now, whether you could expect medieval Jews, German or otherwise, Ashkenazic or otherwise, to say, well, we ignore this because it's Agada, I'm not so sure.
Still, it is not the typical halachic source. Now, the question of the forced character of the argument and the question of whether or not this really is directly relevant to our case comes up in the context of source 3. Rabbi Yaakov, Dehechi, Dechovel, Vahoregas, Atzma, Machmas, Shemis, Yoreshi, Lo, Yichpuhu, Hagoyim, Al Yedei, Yisurimu, Makos, Umisaro, Yoser, Lavod, Avodos, Lavor, Al Das, Yoreshi, Lo, Yichalamod, Behem, this is Rabbi Tam, is quoted as saying that if a person kills himself because he's afraid that he might be tortured, and will not be able to withstand the torture, and consequently end up worshipping Avodah Zarah, mutar, then it's permissible to kill yourself. Kegon, koftsu kulam v'naflu l'sachayom de Gittin, as was the case in this story in Gittin. The afal gav, the misham ein re'ayah kol kach, it's really not such a compelling proof. She al korchom hayu yicholim hashaboim linhog v'hem kolon. Their captors could have raped them without their direct involvement. It's not a question of their submitting to torture and giving, and then quasi willingly doing something they shouldn't do. The objection is dismissed without an argument. Just that's the way it is. Which is reminiscent to a certain degree of another, it's a somewhat different context, but of a different Tosfot in Avodah Zarah that once really struck me in this context. And I actually wrote something about it. And then before I published it, I reread Katz's Exclusiveness and Tolerance, or Ben Yehudim Legoyim, and discovered to my disappointment that he made the point already. So in the world of academic scholarship, there's no achar kach motzosi genre. So you can't say, you can't say it. And then afterwards, you have to say that it was already said by somebody before. But I did have an opportunity in that article where I was writing about Katz himself to tell the readers in a footnote that I actually did think of on my own also. But in any case, it's a Tosfos which says that if you... I'm not going to discuss the details of it at all, but it looks like we should paskin that if someone tries to compel you to worship Avodah Zarah in private, not befarhesya, you should do it. That you should actually paskin Yavor v'aliyeh harei with respect to Avodah Zarah. And Tosfos raises this possibility. It's a Tosfos on Daf Nun Dalet Amud Aleph, I believe, in Avodah Zarah. Dibur HaMaskil Hobbit Sina. There are two Dibur HaMaskil Hobbit Sina. It's the long one. And they say, they give an argument for this afterwards. But their first reaction is v'koshe. This is difficult. The chas v'sholom shenifsok b'avodah zorah yavor v'al yehoreh. This is very difficult to say because God forbid that we should pass him like this. What do you mean God forbid that you should pass him like this? This is the position that you yourself think was held by Rabbi Yishmael. And there's an argument to pass him like it because Rava seems to agree with it. So, what do you mean chas v'sholom? That's an argument. That's what you expect to find in a Tosfos. And then it says ve'od kasher, and then they give a regular argument, which says something about the depth of emotion that this sort of thing triggered. But in any event, here we have a citation of this Gemara, this Haggadah in Gittin, with a dismissal of the argument against its relevance. I have to say, however, I'm going to maybe say this later. I think there's an issue of a Kal v'chomer that might work here, but let's hold off on that.
Quick question.
Yes.
Everybody agrees that the Gemara in Gittin is telling of a true incident that occurred?
Well, but it doesn't matter. What matters is that the Gemara approves of such behavior. So, you know, with the historicity of this, certainly they assumed it was historical. No medieval Jew who read this had any reason to think it's not historical. But it wouldn't matter, because what matters is that the Gemara approves of this behavior. Yeah.
It seems to me the same question that's surrounding the Tosfos, is this a pre-fact legitimate Pesach or a post-fact response which may be tainted?
Okay.
That question applies to the Gemara too, doesn't it? Nobody seems to be bothered by that.
I suppose that you could say that the Gemara, that people who are studying rabbinic thought might be bothered by it. Although I'm not sure that that's the case in this case, because there the question of historicity would arise. If you're talking about a clearly historical event, then you can say that after the fact he responded that way. But for us that doesn't matter. What matters is that it's in the Gemara. Now, so far we've dealt with suicide exclusively. But then there is the killing of children, which, as we'll see, the Maharam later points out is an even more serious matter. In source 4, you will find an argument about that, but without a source. Va'osam ha-kidoshim she-shochatu atzmam v'zar'om ke-shebo'u lidei nisayon mipnei she-lo ratzu lismoch al da'aton. They didn't presumably want to rely on their ability to withstand what they would be subjected to later. The language tells you that some people were not so sure of this, and this is a response. But it's a vigorous response. And now we come to the killing of others. And we can somchu lishchot hayeladim bishas hagezera she'enom yodim ben tov lera lefi she'anu yireim pen yishtak'u ben hagoyim begoyuson kishe yigdelu. They will end up being idolaters. Mutav she'yamusu zako'im v'al yamusu chayovim. Then there's an analogy with Bein Soreu Moreu, that you do something to him because of what will happen later. The analogy is a dubious analogy. But the argument is an argument. But as I said, it's not based on a source. And that brings us back to the very first source, the part we didn't read. It says in Bereishis Rabbah, it's prohibited to commit suicide. Yachol kesho'u, Talmud lamar, ach. Ach is a mi'ut, it's an exclusion, and it excludes the case of sho'ul from the prohibition of suicide. Yachol kachananya mishol v'azaria, Talmud lamar, ach. So there are exceptions to the prohibition against suicide, and the paradigmatic one is Saul. Now, let me say first of all that this is in Bereishis Rabbah, but I am very reluctant to call this an agadic source that could be dismissed. This has, as I once wrote, the look and the feel of halacha. Even somebody who is not anxious or normally doesn't engage agadic materials like the material about the 400 Sheni Shpula Kalon would be hard pressed to ignore this line. We are already dealing with something that I'm prepared to say is certainly very close to being a halachic source. Let's look at the story of Saul, which is in source 5.
David, when is this source 4? When was that written?
It tells you, it's Smaksorg. It's late. It's later medieval Ashkenaz.
But he's quoting, whom is he quoting?
He says he's quoting the Rabbi Yoch, but we don't have it. We don't have it. If we look at the passage about Saul, let's look at verse 4 of Parak Lamed Aleph. Vayomer Shaul Lenosechei Lov Shlovchar Bechoved Okreini Bo Penya Avol Harelim Hoele Utkaruni Visalubi Lo Avono Sechei Lov Kiarem Od Vayikach Shaul Esacherev Vayipol Olav. Saul initially asks his aide to kill him. The aide is not willing to do it, and so he kills himself, or he comes close to killing himself, because there's a later story that there was a certain Amaleki who presumably finished him off, however you read those two stories together. Now, if you look at the Radak here, which I marked off, this is what he says. The last word of the first line that's marked off. V'lo chatosha ul behargo atzmo. Saul did not sin when he killed himself. V'af al pi shekasuv aches nimchem l'nafshal seichem ed rosh, which prohibits suicide. Klomar miyadchem ed rosh oso im targu atzmechem, which is, you know this from Bereishis Rabba. V'chein miyad kol chayo ed reshenu umiyadi shachiv. When we get to the Maharam, we'll see maybe why the Radak quoted the remainder. Af al pichei lo chata, lefi shehayo yodeya Shaul, ki sofo hayo lamus b'milchama, because he had been told this by Shmuel, right? The Balat Ov. Ki chen amra lo Shmuel, ba'ot ki ra'o ki mitza'uhu hamorim, anashim ba'kashim, whatever it is, ba'keshes, v'lo hayo yachol him olek miyodam. He saw that he was doomed. Tova Yosha Yarovu Atzmo V'lo Yisalalubo Ha'arelim V'chein Amur Razal Ach Esnim Chem L'naf Shosechem Edrosh Yachol Kesha'ur Amud Lomar Ach. Now, there is something here that is not wholly explicit in the Radak, but I think demonstrates that, I think the Radak thought it demonstrated, and arguably it does, that this exclusion of the case of like that of Shaul applies also to killing others. Because although Shaul killed himself, or more or less killed himself, he asked his Nosei Kelim to kill him. Now, the idea that that was a sin, but then killing himself was not, is not something that's even hinted at in Bereishis Rabba. The story mentions both of these things in the same verse, and it may well be that when the Radak adds that the latter part of the verse, Miyad Kol Chayo Yedreshenu Miyad Ha'adam, he is pointing to this. Saul didn't sin. It's not, you know, when you say Saul didn't sin, when you're a commentator commenting on this verse, you can't mean he didn't sin in the second half of the verse, but he did sin in the first half. And so I think that the Radak saw this passage, this two parts of this one verse, as evidence that if you're going to use this passage in Bereishis Rabba to permit suicide, then under analogous circumstances, it would be permissible even to at least ask someone else to kill you. This is not quite yet a case of killing someone else without the person's consent, like killing a child. But it does, I think, take us a crucial step closer to that position. And so we come to source number 6, which is a very important sheet. Yes. What? Yes.
The fact that he asked his servant, his aid, to kill him, right, to me does not prove in any way that it was thought of as permissible And in fact, the answer says, ki yore ma'o, the age was afraid. Maybe he was yore Hashem, in fact, that was prohibited. All
right. That wouldn't, I don't think, change the question of whether Saul sinned when he did this. When Radak says that Saul did not sin, it's very difficult for me to assume that he means that he didn't sin when he killed himself, but he did sin in making requests. You can make an argument. Yeah.
Couldn't a king give an order routinely to kill somebody?
Yes, he could, which I suppose raises the question of why the stronger question, perhaps, of why he wasn't obeyed. But the right to give such an order doesn't the right in the sense of the authority to give such an order doesn't make the order right, and that's what's before us. Yeah.
Doesn't the Radak say to her, go, if that's not?
Sorry?
Radak's own words limited to lo chata shol behar go asmo, not in the sense that he, in the request, it was really on the set.
He's talking about what he actually did. So he mentions what he did. If you want to take this as a miut, I suppose that in certain sugyos in the Gemara, this kind of thing could be read as a miut. But I don't think that's what it means.
And also, what about the breaks of Hanan Mishal Barzai? What's the illusion?
Well, there's an issue of jumping into the Kishon. What that means, there's a literature about that too, but I purposely excluded it because we wouldn't have time for it. There's a Gemara that says that had they been tortured, they would have done it, and there's a Rabbeinu Tam on that, and there's actually one passage in quoted in the Shittim Kupetzes that actually makes a halachic distinction between torture and just letting yourself get killed, and that the Torah does not go so far as to require you to subject yourself to torture. But it's an outlying position, but there is such a position.
What fate was Shaul avoiding by killing himself?
That's a very serious matter, and that's one of the arguments that Chaim Soloveitchik makes. He says that, we'll see later, take a look and see how Rabbeinu Tam is quoted in source 7. I'm jumping ahead a little bit. He actually says, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, in the fifth line of source 7, middle of the line, Yachol afilu kishaul melech Yisrael, perush shechaval ba'atzmo, mipnei shoyomis yorei shema ya'aviruhu aldas, tamadomer achmi eit. Now, that's an invention. It's a complete invention which is invented to deal with your question. What does Shaul have to do with this? My own feeling here, it's an argument that Chaim Soloveitchik pushes hard. My sense is, setting aside this, this real leap, which does tell us something, I think one could make an argument, a very plausible argument, especially if you want to, that if Shaul could have committed suicide because of, and you fill in any X you want, because the king of Israel, again, people have filled in X's, because it's a terrible thing for the king of Israel to be subjected to public humiliation or because of the concern of torture, whatever that would lead to. And maybe, given this outlying Shittim Kupetzes, you don't have to die to avoid torture. Whatever answer you give, it would appear to be a kal vachomer that you can commit suicide in order to prevent yourself from worshipping Avodah Zarah. So the passage, I think, can be made relevant even if it's not exactly on point. Yeah.
Well, in the context of Tanakh, would you care to comment on the death of Shimshon?
The death of Shimshon bothers me. Somebody once said that he was the first suicide bomber. There are issues there, but there you're dealing with a war. I think you're really
we are too.
Fine, granted. So that's okay. I mean, so if this is okay, then that would mean that's okay by the same argument. In the course of a war, people sometimes do things and are allowed to do things in terms of endangering their lives, and in this case going one step further, that they would not be allowed to do in other contexts. Maharam deals with this issue in a very striking way that has much to say about the argument before us concerning whether this argument is these arguments are lechatchila or b'di'evet, b'di'evad if you prefer. A Jew asked Rabbi Meir of Rottenberg if he needs kapara because he slaughtered his wife and four children. When they asked him to do this to them, kichein bikshuhu, because they saw that the enemies were starting to kill Jews, al kiddush Hashem, and he too wanted to kill himself after killing them, but he was saved through the Gentiles themselves and couldn't do it. I can imagine. What this person was feeling after this. He wants to know if he needs kapara. And this is what the Maharam says to him. V'chosav lo, second paragraph. Lo yodano shapir mo'edun be. I don't know really how to decide this case. Ki vaday ha-horeg atzmo al yichud Hashem rashay lachvo b'yatzmo. That we know for sure. The Amar Yochol Kishaul Talmud Lomar Ach. We know this. That's clear cut, he said. Dorminon Maaseh B'dal Meyosi Elodim Yadosh Nishbila Kolom. So he quotes this Agadic source also as evidence that it's absolutely permissible to commit suicide. All right, and then there's the story of the woman and her seven sons. I'm skipping a line and a half. Avol lishchot achirim tzarichi yun limtzor ro'ayol ha'atir. Who says you're allowed to kill others? U'mishaul ein ro'ayol isur. All right, I'm going to skip that. You either think that doesn't matter. I mean, at least if you want, we can talk about these two lines, but they're really not that important for us. Skipping to the next paragraph. So there's no clear source to permit killing others. Mihu davar zeh poshat heteiro. Ki shamanu umatsanu sharbe gedolim shayu shochatines b'neihem yas b'nosehen. V'gam rabbi kaloni musasoken ki no hamaschila, whatever it is. We know people did this, and it was great people who did this. V'nireli l'havira oyola hatim. D'chihechi the amar yachol kishaul talmud lomar ach. Ochinami neimo d'ha-horeges chaveiro al kiddush Hashem mutar. Just as you could kill yourself al kiddush Hashem, you can kill someone else. Why? D'vahahu krok siv umiyad ha-adam. Umiyad ish achiv edrosh es nefesh ha-adam. The second half of that verse talks about killing others. V'ach d'resha d'ikra. This ach that excludes the case of Saul from the prohibition applies not only to the first few words of the verse, but also refers to the second half of the verse. Now this is an unusual procedure among Rishonim. And that is, this is not the creation of a brand new drasha on a pasuk, which is extremely rare. It's a creation of a half new drasha on this pasuk. That is, it applies a drasha that exists in Bereishis Rabbah to a part of the verse to which it is not applied in Bereishis Rabbah. That's, I think, an unusual step. And it's a step that he clearly hesitated about. And now we go on. Umi shemat ino kapara, anybody who requires this person to do some act of atonement. Humotzi laz ala chasidim arishonim. That is besmirching the name of the saints of old.
V'acharesha kavanaso hayotova, sotova. Meroba avas yotzreinu yisbarach shemo, poga v'noga b'machmad einov, v'gamhem chilu panov al kocha. He did this out of love of God, and they also asked him to do it. Then it is unthinkable that we should require him to atone for this act. So here we have a pretty striking example of the after-the-fact argument. This is a case where the Maharam is extremely hesitant to permit this. He searches for a heter, and he tells us that he is searching for a heter. And then he finds it, and he reinforces it by pointing to the terrible, the unthinkable consequences of saying otherwise, which would be to say that these Hasidim Harishonim had committed a terrible sin. And I think it's worth considering what the situation looked like at that moment when we ask about the what was going through people's minds. This is a paragraph that I once wrote. If you give me a moment, let me see. This is what I wrote about this in that essay about Jacob's. At the same time, I do not. First, I argued that the case of Saul and that Midrash Rabbah is not so clearly agadic, and that an argument can be made for this position. At the same time, I do not believe that such arguments went through the minds of Jews preparing to commit suicide in the blood-stained arenas of Mainz and Worms. Let us imagine the scene. A large group of Jews is facing the certainty of death or conversion. To save themselves from slaughter at the hands of the crusading hordes, or from the prospect of descending into the maelstrom of idolatry in the face of torture, they decide to take their lives. They know that they will be instantaneously transported to a world of eternal light at the side of Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, and Rabbi Akiva. This is in the Chronicles. Do they take their children with them to eternal bliss, or do they leave them to wander among the bloody corpses of their parents until they are found and raised to live a life of idolatry? I am tempted to say that the choice is clear. In fact, it is not. The choice to slaughter your children is never clear. And the agonies of that choice are evident in the chilling chronicles of those terrible events. Nonetheless, the choice was made, and I think it far more likely that it was made on the basis of an instinctive reaction than on the basis of textual analysis. Once it was made, subsequent Jews, at least for the most part, had little emotional choice but to react like Rabbi Meir of Rothenburg, though he agonized over the question far more than most, and his transparent struggle has much to teach us about the interaction between heart and mind. I will say one other thing, and that is that even if the decision was made the day before with some of these proof texts cited and in mind, one certainly can still regard this, and I think should, as a kind of b'di'eved argument. This is not something done in the cool neutrality of the Beis Medrash. Don't begin to see.
I take it a step further.
Yeah.
It seems to me that once this happened the first time, there can never again be a completely Achila opinion. Because anybody who writes about this and doesn't mention the horror of having to say, would appear really heartless. And once you don't appear heartless, you're going to be subject to that same problem of, is this legitimate sakalacha or after the fact?
Yeah, sure.
And maybe permanently tainted. Well, that's going to
matter. I don't know if it's tainted or if there is precedent, however you want to say it, but sure it affects what happens later. Yeah.
A couple of observations. One thing that seems to be notably missing is, why wasn't there any halachic discussion, perhaps in the Gemara, about this case? Clearly, the Crusades were not the first time that these incidents occurred. The Agadic source in the Gemara itself in Gittin refers to a situation like that. And yet there's no discussion about those events from a more critical perspective. Similarly, the case of Shaul himself, he went and asked the Shaila. I mean, in the middle of the battlefield? I mean, he appears to be acting instinctively, perhaps, with a sort of sense of this seems to be the right thing to do, even within the context, or in the absence of any specific drash at hand. It just appears a little striking.
What is the... I'll sort of try to answer this by making the question stronger. One of the things that Chaim Soloveitchik points out in his response article is that you have very little discussion of this later either. The discussion comes up in the context of these events and reference to these events. You don't find very much in terms of codification of this position, which may in itself indicate that there is a residual sense of unease that's at work here. Yes?
How would you contrast the this period's reaction to this with what happened in World War II, vis-a-vis leaving children with non-Jewish parents, and also essentially leading them to be raised as idolaters? How do you compare the reactions of the two communities, the two events?
I think that you have to know that during the First Crusade, there were Jews who converted. This was not a universal phenomenon at all. And what is particularly interesting is that the chroniclers tell us that they converted because they were worried about what would happen to their children. And what is even more interesting is that the chroniclers, even though they lionize the people who killed themselves, do not denounce those who did it. There are a variety of reactions, even in the Middle Ages. In the modern period, I think it's fair enough to say that the degree of religious fervor and intensity was less, even among observant Jews. And so the percentage of people who would save their children this way would be high. But it was so even in the Middle Ages to a certain degree. Yes?
It appears to me that taking the motion out of it and looking at purely as a halachic question, really the question is you have two averos that Yehari Bal Yavor, which avera has precedence? Is it murder or is it idolatry? And I'm wondering whether he doesn't seem to really be addressing that central question. Any of the other post-game or any other sources address that really question of it going into
the question is basically addressed only in the context that you have before you. Is it appropriate to kill these children in order to prevent that from happening later? There is a difference between active sin and a passive act that will lead to sin by somebody else, or arguably even by you. So that I don't know that the only question is weighing murder against idolatry. It's a question of weighing murder, which is an active thing to do, against the sheva al ta'aseh that will probably, even overwhelmingly likely, lead to idolatry. Yes?
How does this reconcile with the concept of a filo cherev chada v'nefes al sevari shalavim ha'yimadei sa'asim ha'rachim? I mean, you don't truly know, to make a decision. How do you know how events will turn out? Which way the marauders will go in coming towards the town? You don't really know.
Look, I mean, that is what happened in the case of that fellow who asked the Maharam this question. It's true. The question of whether this agadic statement should determine practical behavior is in itself a question. Yes.
Is it possible, Mark made a moment ago, that the earlier cases, I don't remember cases of what we would call Shas Hashmad, where the compulsion was going to be to commit idolatry earlier in history. So I wonder whether it really would have come up, the absence of this kind of case with the fear is avodah zarah, as opposed to the fear being immorality or something else.
We're not teaching Torah.
Yeah.
We're not teaching Torah.
Right. So, I mean, in other words, the avodah zarah somehow may push it to a whole different level.
That kind of story,
Kano? Kind of
issue of my own. It's reflective.
But that's not what, I mean, what they're doing, they're Moser Nefesh in order not to, you know, the sons don't kill themselves.
And of course, in this case, I didn't read the Hebrew, but I did say half a sentence summarizing it, where it's actually mentioned by the Maharan. Yes.
When you read from your book the passage before, I think I heard you say that whether it was for a fear of a avodah zarah or for fear of being killed. Where do we have that idea emerging? Everything we're hearing here is the kalon or a avodah zarah.
Well, there was a line about saladubo harelim, if I remember correctly, right? I don't know if I want to go look for it in a second. But to rather do this than be killed literally.
In the Radak, is it?
What? The Radak. Was that in the Radak? Yeah, Sashalo Yisalaluba Harayli, which doesn't seem to be, you know, fear of Avodah Zarah. It might be
the humiliation of a king.
Yeah,
being
all right, okay.
That
means that there was this intense sense of unease. Yes.
I just want to just say
there's a grave in this fact.
You do have Gemaras that discuss, I would say, dispassionately, these kinds of horrible choices when you're dealing with not so public events. You know, all those Gemaras about life books. But you're not dealing there with, let's call it a national column. And that seems to really compromise a dispassionate discussion. I don't know what Gemaras that talk about that. But you get individual cases, but not when you're talking about. And it seems to me also to be evoking the same thing that Rambam quotes about. The game changes completely when it becomes a matter of national purpose.
To some degree, I think that that's true. But it's also the case that in the cases in the Gemara, generally speaking, the option of passive death was available. Rather than compulsion to commit avodah zarah, as Moshe said.
But it would still differentiate between a small group and a national group with, you know, when there's a flag involved, whether it's a different story.
I mean, that's the relevance of the king issue. Let me wind this down by pointing to two cases in which there are reservations expressed. One is really just reservations, and the other is much more powerful. The Ritva passage in Source 7 cites the permissibility position from Rabbeinu Tam, and he ends by saying, I already read you a little part of the first part, I won't go over it again. If you look at the last, beginning with the last word of the third from the last line, before you can decide that it's okay to do such things. Elo shekvar horaza kain, the Rabbi Mutam already said so. The shamanu b'shem gedolei tzarfas shehi tiru kain halacholam aseh. And therefore, I, the Ritva, cannot oppose this. But it's clear that his own reaction would be a negative one. And we finally come to the one but really striking passage of opposition among Ashkenazic Jews themselves. And this is in the Das Akeni Mibalei HaTosfos to the verse, Ba'achem Tzimchem Lenafshoseichem Edrosh, etc. I am not going to read most of it because we know what's in most of it, the reference to Saul, and so on. But five lines from the bottom, we have the following extremely unusual and, I'll say, hair-raising passage. Ma'aseh b'rav echad shashochat harbei tinokos bishas hashmad ki hayo yorei sheyavirum al dos v'hayo rav echad imo v'hayo ko'eso lov b'yoseir v'koreo rotseach v'hu lo hayo choshesh. Imagine that scene. V'amaro so rav im kidvorai, that is the one who opposed this, said, im kidvorai, if I am right, Ye horego so rav b'misom eshumna. V'chein haya. Shatfasuhu goyim v'hayu poshtino ro v'nosnin chol v'in ha'or v'habasar. V'achakach nispatlo ha'gzeiro v'imlo shachato santino kos v'hayu nitzolim. So even in Ashkenaz, and even after the events, we find at least one case of vigorous opposition.
Is the operative word here hareg, or is it harbe, shachat, or harbe? And in other words, is it a question of he's doing something halakhically wrong, or is there a certain chashas that in times like this, certain people, I don't know if you want to call it word extreme, whatever word you want to use, might go overboard. Once he starts, he doesn't stop. And it's a question, not of halakha, it's a question of people's judgment.
I don't know. I mean, it could be, but I, you know, my instinct is that we're dealing here with an issue of principle. In the final analysis, what was unthinkable for the Maharam, despite this last passage that I read to you, what was unthinkable for the Maharam was also unthinkable for the Jewish people. And so the martyrs of 1096 were indeed lionized. And they did indeed, after all, show a level of devotion to God, whether one thinks that it was entirely justified or not, that is difficult to even imagine. And so I will end with an indication of how they were memorialized in our liturgy. This is a passage near the very end of the Slichos of Erev Rosh Hashanah, when many people are anxious to have an end, and I don't know how many people pay the amount of attention to this that it deserves. And so I will end by just reading this passage to you. Ono habet betzikasa vadecha chasidecha asher harum nafshon mamusalecha lo chosua nafshon v'yazaram v'kotzu umo asu b'chayei olam hazeh ובטלו רצונם מפני רצונך, וקידשו שמך הגדול ולא חיללוהו, ורצו לזבח ופשטו צווארם ועמדו בניסיון ונאמנו. ונבחנו בצירוף ונמצאו תמימים, ונגעו דמי אבוס ובנים ודמי רחמניוס וילדיהן, ונשרבו דמי אחים ואחיוס ודמי חסונים וחלוס ודמי חכמים וחכמוס, ודמי הגונים והגונוס ודמי חסידים וחסידוס ודמי זקנים וזקנוס, ודמי בחורים ובחורות, ודמי פרנסים בחזוניהם, ודמי דיינים וסופריהם, ודמי מלמדים וסלמידיהם, ודמי אנשים ונשוסיהם, ונהרגו כולם יחד על קידוש שמך המיוחד. ארץ אל תחסיד עמם ואל יהי מקום לזעקתם, עד ישקיף יאיר ה' משמיים, וינקום נקמסו ונקמס עמו ונקמס תורסו ונקמס דם עבדו, ואשר שפכו דמם כמים, כי הבטחתנו ביד אבי חוזה, הרנינו גויים עמו כי דם עבדו ויקום. ונקב יושיב לצהרו וכיפר עד מסו עמו. עשה למזבחו שכור ואלה הקידוס תראה, וינוחם בשקח אף החלך עמו, וסשפיס שוד ושבר מעמך, חוס ורחם אסייסר הפליטה, וסוציאנו מאפיגו לאורו, וחדש עלינו שנה טובה, שנס רצון ועש גאולה.
Thank you. Please take food. Can I see one?
But it seems to me there's a logic there too. We heard this morning to the fear of being killed. I didn't see anything really explicit that said, you know what, if you just have the fear of being killed,
that's it. You argue that you don't want to be killed.
Thank you.
I don't see it for
you. You need a wrong thing.
Someone got forbidden to end up in Paris and in the next day and they jump off the seats. That was seen by the one who should be correct. Was there a lucky question? Was there a lucky basis for the
Paris? Was
there
a lucky basis for
the Paris? No, not at all. It's the Easter Bowl. 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 It's the
that the Crusades, Crusaders were out just to subvert the Jews.
You think so?
It wasn't exclusive. I think it was genocidal.
What?
It was genocidal.
The case in Europe was called a lot where they rounded up the Jews who were found refuge in the Catholic and then the
you can see why.
Is this off? Did you turn it off?
I never know. I think it's stopped.